if we want to overcome the darkness in our lives, the darkness that creeps in, the things that we struggle with, the things that are hard for us, we have to be willing to do something, to change something, to try something different.
And I'm convinced that the human spirit was not designed to simply maintain normal. Somewhere along the line, we forget that our job wasn't to maintain normal. Our job was to step into an unprecedented future where God continually presses us into what's next.
God will never ask you to respond to a call that doesn't already speak to the best part of you, the part of you that was designed for greatness, that deep down knows that there is something more.
Hey, and welcome to the Humanity Church Podcast. I hope that you enjoy this week's talk and want to invite you to join us live at 10 a.m. at the Glasshouse Concert Hall in beautiful downtown Pomona. Or you can join the conversation at www.humanitychurch.com. You can also download the Humanity Church app on iTunes or Android and keep up with the conversation and community there. If you would like to financially support this podcast and the ongoing work at Humanity, you can text the one word, Humanity Church, to 77977 or check out the giving option on the app. Enjoy this week's talk.
How are you guys doing this morning? Good? Great? Someone's great. I mean, I love it. Welcome to Humanity Church. We're so glad that you guys are here. My name is Kara, and I'm one of the communicators here, and so I'm really excited to be with you guys here today. So we've been in a series called Seven, as you can see. Nathan and the team thought it would be really fun after, you know, a nice Easter and resurrection that we just talk about deadly sins, right? Really fun. We did skip last week because we couldn't figure out a good sin to talk about on Mother's Day. Like, what if you talk about gluttony on Mother, right? Like, no, that ain't right. So we didn't do anything. We didn't do a sin last week. But the weeks before, we've talked about envy and we've talked about vainglory. Nathan talked about envy and that the antidote to envy is love. And he talked about vainglory or vanity, and the antidote to that is humility. So we've been going over these seven deadly sins or vices. They're not actually listed in the Bible, right, as the seven deadly sins, like the bad Ten Commandments. No, that's not a real, there's no list of the seven deadly sins, but these show up throughout Scripture. And really, we can see how they can wreak havoc on our lives if they are unchecked. So the Bible does talk about these, and so we're excited. For me, so far, just the past 2 weeks have been really convicting, a really good chance to look inside myself and see where those things are showing up, because I think it's easy to say, like, oh, I don't do that. I'm not vain, you know? I would have probably said that, and, like, before I was coming up here, I thought this week, like, I should get a new outfit because I'm, like, I'm speaking, so I want to, like, wear something cute that I look, and then I'm like, oh, my, look, Kara, have you learned nothing? Like, you're so vain. So I didn't, okay? This is all, I didn't buy a new outfit or anything. But I think this is a really good series to kind of just look in yourselves. And our conversation that we get to have today, I really believe if we gain mastery over this, that it can really transform your marriage and your parenting and your job and all your relationships. And I'm not, like, overstating that. So I want you guys to imagine a few things with me. And then after the end, there are a bunch of random little things. At the end, I want you guys to tell me how you're feeling. Okay? You get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and you stub your toe on your dresser. Why is that the worst? You walk out of the bathroom. You've been in there for 2 minutes. You see your toddler has gotten a Sharpie and colored on the walls. That's not a real life example or anything. You're driving on the freeway and someone cuts you off and then proceeds to drive really slowly. You get written up at your job because someone else made a mistake. Yeah, we know, I know, right? This is a very relatable thing, you guys. You let your teenager borrow your car and they rear end someone. You get a D on a paper that you worked really, really hard on. How are you guys feeling?
Angry.
Angry, yes, right? We're irritated. Why is the worst of all those stubbing your toe? Yeah. Like that dresser is out to get you. It wants you to be mad. Gosh. Okay, so we're feeling mad, right? We're feeling angry. We're feeling irritated. We're feeling maybe a little bit like, oh, why does that stuff happen? Well, can you guess what we're talking about today? Anger. The deadly sin of anger. I think if we're honest, we can all relate to this. maybe more than we'd like to admit, but I'm up here admitting it in front of all of you, so just imagine how great that is. I think it's a sin that has a lot of redeeming qualities, and I really think it can be used as a force for good. And I definitely relate to this. Actually, when we got to pick, I got to pick which sin I wanted to talk about, and I picked this. I don't know why. After I picked it, I was like, oh man, I struggle with this so much. I don't know if I should be up here talking to you guys about anger, right? But here I am. To give you a little quick reference, I'm a Taurus. That's my sign, represented by a bull. I'm an 8 on the Enneagram, which is called the Challenger. And you could say that I have a little bit of fire in my belly. I think God was just like, let's give her a little extra something just to really, really, really drive it home. I identify as a prophet on the fivefold. So you could say that I'm well-versed in anger, the bad and the good parts. And the Bible has a lot to say about anger. If you, like, put in the word anger in your Bible app, you will get a lot of reference to anger. I think that's because it's something that we can't avoid because it's a feeling, it's an emotion, right? We don't find the Bible saying, don't be angry, or here, do this, and you'll never feel angry again. That would be awesome. The Bible does talk a lot about how we should or shouldn't behave when we feel angry. Now, I was wrestling through this. I was asking myself a lot of questions. Is it always bad to be angry? Is there ever a time where it's okay to be angry? When is anger warranted? Why does it feel so good to be mad? Right? You guys, it does. So you have Christians on both sides of the camp. You have some Christians, theologians who say, like, never. Right? Like, anger has no place. It's never productive. And then you have people on the other side who say, well, anger checked and, you know, regulated and used for good is a real thing. I definitely fall into the camp that it has a place, and we're going to dig into that later, but let's first jump into why anger will kill you. Anger is dangerous because it infiltrates every area of our life. Anger affects us physically, affects us emotionally, spiritually, and relationally. All four of those areas, that's basically like your entire life. And so, in case you didn't like gather that. And it really can wreak havoc on all those areas. And so I kind of wanted to dig into each of those areas and see how anger shows up and how it's really, really bad. So if you guys ever heard of the term fight or flight, anger's your fight. Right? When we're talking about fight or flight, when you're choosing that fight response, that's anger. That's what's welling up in you, right? So anger is experienced in our bodies as well as our minds. There's a complex series of events that happen when you get angry, okay? So emotions begin in our amygdala, which is in our brain. It's responsible for identifying threats to our well-being. So this is a good part of your brain, right? I mean, this is God designed that for a reason, right? Because there's some things you should be afraid of, and you should have that well up in you. So the amygdala tells us there's a threat, and it sends out an alarm in our body, okay? Now, I'm going to read this part because it's like kind of science-y, okay? So the amygdala is so efficient about warning us about threats that it gets us reacting before the cortex, which is the judgment part of your brain, has a chance to respond. So you get angry so fast that that cortex here that's telling you like, whoa, don't say that, don't do that, calm yourself down, your fight response is way faster than that. So that's fun. So in other words, our brains are wired to influence us before we can think properly, okay? Not an excuse for behaving badly, let's be clear about that. So when you're angry, your muscles tense up, right? Neurotransmitter chemicals are released in your brain. You're getting adrenaline. You're getting cortisol, which is like that stress hormone. Your heart rate goes up, right? Blood pressure rises. Your breathing gets fast. If you're lucky, your face gets red because that's really, really attractive. Your attention narrows in and locks in on whatever the target of that anger is, right? And all that time, this is happening like really fast. And then you can't pay attention to anything else, right? And you get you're triggered into a state of arousal. You're ready to fight, okay? So this also is associated with fear, excitement, anxiety. So that's also that response. You're flooded with hormones. Your blood is actually taken away from other areas in your body and you know, rushes here. Heart rate, blood pressure, respiration, your mind is sharpened. This is why sometimes have you ever been so angry or have been in such a big argument that after you can't really remember all the details? Yeah, that's because you were like, your brain was out of whack, man. And mine too, right? This happens where you're like, whoa, like what exactly happened? Why did we start fighting like that, right? And these are things we're familiar with. This would be an angry outburst, right? This would be a big argument, a blow up. We're familiar with that kind of anger. This is anger that can lead to violence, right? Physical violence. This is someone makes you mad and you hit them. Kid doesn't listen to you, you slap them. You're mad at your wife, you hit her, right? That's where that all comes from. And did you guys know that babies and young children that are in situations where domestic violence or even just a high-level anger is a constant thing for them, that their brains actually change? That the trauma actually changes the structure of their brains. This also happens when the baby is still in the womb. That the structure of their brain is altered because of anger, right? So it's powerful. Then there's this other kind of anger that's also really bad for your health, and that's chronic anger, which can present as like low-level irritability. You all know that person that's just like always like irritated all the time at everything. They're hostile, you know, that those people. I'm kind of one of those people, so when I say those people, just know I'm like me. So chronic anger also affects your health, like in a really... It's like, actually, I was like doing some research and I was blown away at how bad anger is for your physical health, okay? So chronic anger, it's been linked to obesity, low self-esteem, migraines, drug and alcohol addiction, depression, sexual performance problems, increased heart attack risk, low quality relationships, high probability of abusing others emotionally or physically, higher blood pressure, and higher risk of stroke. Chronic anger also leads to anxiety, insomnia, mental or brain fog, fatigue. It can reduce your immune system's responses. It lowers the very things in your body that are designed to fight infection, which makes you more susceptible for disease. So you can have digestive problems because of anger, depression, high blood pressure, skin problems, heart attack, stroke. There were even some things that talked about it because it lowers your immune response that it can be linked to like other diseases like cancer. Not to mention you're also just really terrible to be around, right? no one wants to be friends with that person. Okay, so we all can kind of see like being angry is not good for your health, right? I mean that... In very scary ways that when you are chronically angry, you are shaving years off your life while doing a whole other host of damaging things, okay? So let's talk about our emotions. We're going to feel angry, right? If there was a way to never feel angry, I think maybe God would have told us, but I think he didn't tell us because it doesn't exist. Proverbs 29:11 says this, "Fools give full vent to their rage, but the wise bring calm in the end." It doesn't say fools feel angry. It says fools let that down and they give their anger all the power, right? And so the way I think about anger is like a check engine light. When you're angry, that's a check engine light saying something is wrong. Something is going on beneath the surface that you need to handle. And you can ignore a check engine light. Actually, one time I did. I was on a road trip with my boyfriend, who's now my husband. We were 18. We were driving up to the Bay Area for a wedding. And I had a very old Honda Accord station wagon. It was bright green. And I don't know why we drove my car and not his. Maybe his was worse. We drove my car. We packed it super full because, like, when you go on a road trip, you know, you're like, it's a car. We have so much room. Like, let's just put everything in here. We're driving along the 5 freeway for a very long time, and it's getting dark. It's getting late, and the check engine light goes on. And we're like, whatever, man. Let's just keep going. This is bad thing to do. So we're like, let's just keep going. Like, it's fine. Like, we are, you know, whatever, dude, we're good. And so we keep going. And then there starts this god-awful screeching sound coming out of my car. Like, I'm not even going to make it because I think it'll hurt your ears. But it was really loud. And then we're like, oh, that's not good. Like, that's loud. Once the noise started happening and the light, we're like, oh, we got to do something. So we proceed. We still keep going because we're like on the five. By the way, it's like 11 o'clock at night now. It's obviously dark. We're like on the 5 freeway in the middle of nowhere. So we have to wait to get to a rest stop. So we get to a rest stop finally. And the engine is, it's done. Like, it's literally dead. I don't know about cars, but the engine was dead. So we were like, we called a tow truck. We literally left the car at the one service station that was in the little town that we were by. And we like put a note on it and left the keys. And we're like, we're going to go hitch a ride, you know, with a family friend, not with like a stranger. We got a ride up to the Bay Area. Anyway, the engine was shot. I had to pay for a new engine for my car, which is what every 18-year-old wants to do. and I still look back and I'm like, what if we would have pulled over right when the check engine light came on? Might have ended a different way. And think about that what feeling angry is an invitation to see what's going on deeper. Feeling angry is a chance to say like, okay, what am I pushing down? What is happening beneath the surface? I need to do an examination. I need to look in myself and see what is this anger coming from, right? So we can say it's not great to give full vent to your anger. It's also not good to shove your anger down because this leads to a whole host of mental health problems. It was said once, I heard that anger, depression is anger turned inward, that is what it is when we're depressed, is that it's we're angry at ourselves. And that's not good either, you guys. That's not how God made us. The other thing about anger is it's pretty accepted, I think, especially now, you guys. Everybody's angry about stuff, like, all the time, right? It's kind of, like, okay to be angry. You know, you're angry, and people are like, yeah, you're right. Like, that is, like, that would make me mad, too. Like, we almost glorify it a little bit more than some other feelings that we may be having, embarrassment or sadness or hurt. We're like, nah, just be angry. So we like anger. And anger also makes us feel in control and really, really powerful. Unlike those other emotions that I kind of touched on, those don't really make you feel powerful. Those make you feel like you need help. And we don't want to feel like that. So when we keep holding on to this anger, we get irritable, we blow up. If we don't let that anger out, it leads to resentment and bitterness. And then spiritually, God made us fully feeling, right? He knew what he was doing. He gave us a range of feelings, and he gave us free will, which is a little bit terrifying because if we look back at Cain and Abel, like the very beginning, like he murdered his brother, like because he was angry. He like killed his, I mean, so you think then God would have been like, ooh, maybe the feelings and the free will weren't a great combo, but too late now. All that to say that God isn't like shocked when we're angry. He's not afraid of our anger, right? He can handle it. He doesn't, you know, shrink back when we're angry like some people do or scold us. He understands. He designed anger. He designed it for forgiveness and repair, but we redirect it toward bitterness and resentment. We can look through the Bible and we can see a lot that God was angry, right? It says, like, again, if you search anger, God was angry a lot. I mean, rightfully so. You know, he, like, tried to help us and we, like, mess it up and he's like, oh my gosh, like, come on, you guys. So he's not afraid of it. Like, when my kids are mad at me, which, you know, they are because I, like, have to, you know, tell them what to do and they don't like it, obviously. When they're mad at me, I'm not afraid. I'm not like, how dare you be mad at me? I'm like, yeah, I know you're mad. Like, it's okay. I see, you know, you're mad. Cool. That's when I'm in my good moments. In the other moments, I'm like, what are you so mad about? So when I'm in my right mind, that's what I'm, you know, saying. It's like, I understand you're mad. That's okay. You can be mad. And then, like, let's move forward. So God's not fragile. Just remember that. He's not scared of us feeling angry at all. He can handle it. But we can't stay angry at God or with people because it creates distance and it fractures relationships. When we stay like that and just keep that anger and don't do anything to resolve it. Okay, relationally, I think this is huge. I think this affects all of us, whether we are the recipient or the giver of anger. And let's be honest, we are all sometimes the giver of the anger. You don't get angry unless you care about someone, right? Because we don't want people to be apathetic either. We don't want them to just be like, whatever, do whatever you want, I don't care. Anger means you care about something. It means you care about a person, okay? But we can't stay there. And have you ever noticed that your anger unleashes on those that are closest to you, either emotionally or just in proximity to you? Like you have a bad day at work, but like you can't like tell your coworker that he's an idiot, but then you like come home and you're kind of a jerk to everybody that lives in your house. I mean, I do that. Because you're mad at something else, right? But we kind of reserve our big anger for the people that we love, which is, you know, really interesting. But again, like when we talked about the check engine light, what is underlying that anger? So once my daughter, she was 4 then, maybe 3, and she's just so much like me that we get mad at each other all the time. And she's very strong-willed, and she really has a lot of opinions about things, and sounds like I'm talking about myself, but I'm actually talking about my daughter. And one day, she said, I'm hungry. And I said, okay, well, you can have a piece of fruit, like, for a snack if you're hungry. And she was like, okay. So she goes to the fridge, and she's like, there's not any fruit. All, you know. So she's already having an attitude, so I'm having a little bit of an attitude. I'm like, yes, there is. There's apples in the drawer. Like, mean. This is really how I'm talking, okay? I'm like, there's apples right in the drawer. Like, get an apple. She goes, an apple isn't a fruit. And I'm like, yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. An apple is a fruit. I'm really doing this to, like, a 4-year-old child. An apple is a fruit. And she's like, no, it's not. And I'm like, yes, I'm like, go. This is like minutes of this. My husband's dying because he also parents this child and we get sucked into this insanity. I'm like, it is a fruit. It doesn't matter what you say, it's a fruit, right? And then I'm like, holy crap, I am yelling at a 4-year-old about something that is not up for debate, right? Even if she doesn't admit it, an apple is a fruit, in fact. I'm so glad I can really lay myself bare here for you. Really, when I stop after I like rage and then have to apologize, I think about it and you know what that is I don't want her questioning my authority. I want her to listen to me. I want to be in control. I want to be the boss. And I want her to know that. Ugh. That's so ugly, you guys. Woo! But that's what that was about. It wasn't about being angry that she said an apple wasn't a fruit. It was about how dare you defy me, right? What about this? You are up for a promotion at work and you're like a shoo-in. You're gonna get it. So you're like with your buddies, like, yeah, I'm gonna get this promotion. And they're like, yeah, man, you are. And you tell your wife, like, I'm gonna be making this much more money. And then you don't get it, right? And what is your reaction? You are mad. That boss is a jerk. Well, you know, you're just raging, and all your buddies are like, yeah, what a jerk. Can't believe it. You deserve this. All the stuff. And really, what I think maybe in that situation is underlying it is you're embarrassed that you told everybody you were getting a promotion and now you're not. You're a little bit ashamed. You're a little bit hurt, but you don't want to say that because no one wants to say, I'm embarrassed that I thought I was getting it and now I'm not. Right? No one, like, you don't want to say that, you guys. Come on. But it's the truth, right? How about this? I'm so mad at my teenager. He does not listen to me. He keeps making all these stupid choices. Ugh. I'm so mad. And you might be mad, but really, what's underneath that? Are you hurt? Do you just want to be in control? Are you a little sad that your baby is growing up and is making decisions on their own? But we don't want to say that. We want to say we're mad, not I'm really sad or I'm hurt or I miss you, right? We want to give full vent to that rage. We have another thing in the Bible, you guys, that it's from Proverbs. So much good stuff about anger in Proverbs, you guys. 15:18 says, a hot tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel, right? So a hot-tempered person is creating this conflict. And it's creating conflict based around anger, not around hurt or the real thing that's underlying that pain, right? Like when you're mad at your husband because he didn't get you an anniversary gift or he didn't recognize that this day was important to you, are you really mad or are you hurt? That's a whole different ballgame to say, like, my feelings are hurt because, you know, this is a special day to us and you didn't acknowledge it. Right? No, we're like, you're a jerk, right? I'm going out. See you later, right? That's what we do. We don't say you hurt my feelings. So anger can go wrong in its target and in the way we express it. Okay? So you ever like snap at somebody like at the front desk or a waitress or whatever, and they didn't really do anything to you? You're just like kind of already in a bad mood, and then they like something happens and you're just like so mean to them. And when you step back, you're like, oh, like they didn't actually do anything. Like I'm kind of a jerk. right? And when we let anger overtake us, we do and say things that we regret. And we do and say things that sometimes we can't take back in those moments where our fight response is going faster than our thinking brain response. And this kind of touches on it in Ephesians. It says, it's Ephesians 4, 26 and 27. It says, in your anger, do not sin. That's important. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. Usually we stop here at this verse, but listen to what 27 says. Do not give the devil a foothold, right? It's not about never go to bed if you're angry, because I've gone to bed angry quite a few times. Maybe you have too. I've gone to bed still feeling like there's unresolved things that I'm still kind of angry about. But when we let our anger linger, we give the devil a chance to move in and to push us to do and say things that we are going to regret, right? So we're angry, which is okay. People do things that make us angry, and we do things that make people angry. But then we let ourselves stew in it, and then the devil comes in and says, like, you know what? You're right. You should do this. You should say this. He deserves it. She deserves it. She was mean to you. She hurt you. You're angry. Give power to that, right? And what this is telling us is in our anger, do not sin. Not don't feel angry ever. Just in your anger, do not sin. One other way that I think anger shows up relationally that isn't 100% obvious is through unforgiveness. Because really what unforgiveness is like anger that's unresolved that you just kind of shove down and just hold on to this like bitterness towards whomever it is. One of my favorite authors, Anne Lamott, she says this about unforgiveness. She says, not forgiving is like drinking rat poison and then waiting for the rat to die. Right? It doesn't make any sense. Unforgiveness is only hurting you. Only you. And in those physical ways that we talked about. Right? So you're shortening your life because you're mad at someone and they're going on about their merry way. They don't give a care about you. But you're still holding on to that, right? So don't think anger always shows up in a big explosive way. Sometimes it shows up low level in unforgiveness, in bitterness, in resentment, in cynicism that we just kind of keep at this low level. So now we know why anger's terrible. You guys all feeling sad and depressed and convicted. I am. But there's an antidote, right? And I believe there's a way that we can take anger and we can transform it for some really good things. And what I wrestled with is like, what is the antidote to anger? Is it being nice? Is it being gentle? Is it, you know, and those are some of the answers that if you look, that's the answer. And I was like, gentleness cannot be the answer because I'm just not gentle. I don't know. I don't know. God did something funny with me. So what I, after just wrestling and praying, is I think the antidote to anger is compassion. Compassion towards others and compassion toward yourself. It has to go both ways. And for as much as the Bible talks about God's anger, it talks about his compassion even more. Check out Isaiah. I'm going to read you two verses from Isaiah that talk about God. And this is in Isaiah 30:18. It says, yet the Lord longs to be gracious to you. Therefore, he will rise up to show you compassion, for the Lord is a God of justice. Blessed are those who wait for him. That's Isaiah 30, 18. And if we go a little further in Isaiah, to Isaiah 54, 8, we read this, which is just like picture perfect to what we've been talking about. In a surge of anger, I hid my face from you for a moment. But with everlasting kindness, I have compassion for you, says the Lord your Redeemer. I mean, what? I actually envision God like actually like a dad. You know when your kid does something that you should be pissed about and you're like, I gotta go. Like, because I'm going to like do something that isn't good. That's what I imagine God doing. Like, just hold on. I got to like get right over here before I slap you upside the head. And then he turns, right? It says he hid his face. He was mad, right? We get mad, but we can turn, take a second, and return with compassion. Because that is what God does for us, you guys. Compassion motivates. It gets you to move. It gets you out of the feeling and into the doing, right? And you go out of your way to help the physical, emotional needs of other people and of your own. The Bible is full of examples of Jesus seeing things that are wrong and doing something about it, right? Like all the time. When he's just walking around, one verse says, he saw some people who were blind, I believe. He says, yeah, Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes. Immediately they received their sight, okay? And there's, if you read through the New Testament, the Gospels, Jesus does this all the time. He sees something and it says he has compassion on them. It is an action, right? It's not like, oh, he felt bad. Like, oh, those poor blind guys, man, sorry. Or even comfort, like, I'm sorry you're blind, like, okay. Like, I mean, like, he does something about it, right? He's always doing things. And I love a lot of the verses talk about him being filled with compassion. He was filled. He was compelled to do something to alleviate the suffering of the people that he was coming in contact in it, right? It's doing something. So feeling anger does nothing productive, even though it feels like it does. Do you ever feel like when you're feeling angry, you're like, yeah, like you feel like you're doing something or you're like have power? But feeling angry doesn't actually do anything, right? Feeling angry and doing nothing isn't helpful. If you just feel angry all the time, even about things you should be angry about, nothing's gonna change and you're gonna experience all those other terrible things that we talked about, all the health effects, all the relational effects. Even if you're angry about something that you should be angry about, you guys. And as it relates to justice, I think that this verse gives us some good clarity. It's from James 1, 19 to 20. It says, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Again, the next part's really important. Don't leave this off. Because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Feeling angry does not produce righteousness. Even if you're angry about something righteous. Just feeling the anger, it does zero for anybody. And in this book I was reading, it said, anger as a holy emotion has justice as its object and love at its root. There are some things that should make us angry, right? Human trafficking, does that make you pretty angry that like people are bought and sold? Yeah, that makes me very angry. The fact that there are 100,000 kids in foster care waiting for families, sometimes that keeps me awake at night, you guys. I can't sleep because I just feel so mad about that, you guys. Kids starving, right? People die still today. In this day and age, people die of starvation. They don't have enough food or clean water. I'm mad at systemic racism, right? I'm mad that people abuse children. That makes me angry. That should make you a little bit angry. If you hear that and you're like, I don't know, maybe like check your heart a little bit. those things should make us feel angry, right? But that anger should lead us to compassion, not to more anger. Do you know what it does for the cause of stopping human trafficking if you feel angry? Nothing. What if you feel angry your whole life and you tell everybody how angry you are? Doesn't do anything, right? So feeling angry is not productive. Feeling angry about kids in foster care doesn't actually help kids in foster care find families, right? So anger should always move us toward compassion. If you don't like human trafficking. We have somebody who's a member of our church who lives in Thailand full time and fights against trafficking in Thailand. You should give him some money every month to support him if you're mad about human trafficking. Or if you're mad about human trafficking, maybe consider adopting a teenage girl locally who is very, very, very likely to be forced into trafficking at some point in her life if she doesn't find a family, right? These are the things that when we see something unjust or that makes us angry, we don't stew in that anger. We do something about it or we say something about it. And we say, this is not right. And I think that that's okay. I think it's okay. I have to believe it's okay because God really gave me some passion and anger about things that are not right, things that are not just. But feeling angry about those things will do nothing. So if you're not going to do anything about it, I would just say let the anger go because then you're just going to have all these bad effects in your life. Just let it go, right? We can't fix everything. So I really want to encourage you to check and to see, like, is my anger leading to me doing something? The last way that we need to really have compassion for ourselves is learning ways to calm your anger, right? It would be mean if I just came up here and was like, don't be angry, good luck. Bye. Figure it out. It's hard. So I just wanted to give like a couple like little practical ways to not let your anger get you into sinning. And at least give you a little bit of a way out. Obviously, if this is a real issue for you, you should like talk to somebody about it or like see a therapist and talk about it. Really, I really mean that. But these are just some quick ways. The first thing I think that really helps you get rid of your anger is to let go of control and manage your expectations. Part of anger is almost like you feel entitled, like things should go this way. And so when we manage those expectations and say like, look, you don't deserve anything, right? You are not entitled to a promotion. You are not entitled to kids that obey your every word. You are not entitled to a spouse that never makes you mad. So I think when we let go of the control, and as terrible as it sounds, lower our expectations a little bit about what we're owed, about how we should be treated, then we can kind of make it less about us being powerful and angry and more about us just being able to, like, let things go and say, like, look, maybe they were having a bad day. Maybe this happened to this person and now they're mad at me or whatever. So managing our expectations and letting go of control, much easier said than done. The other way that I think is good to combat anger is through humor, through laughing. Have you ever been in a big argument with like your spouse or somebody? And we've done this before where you're in a big argument and then like somebody mispronounces a word or like says something really dumb and you just start laughing. we've done that. Probably me. I'm always messing things up. And as much as you want to be angry, like you just laugh about it because you're like, wow, this is ridiculous. If you took a step out and looked at the two of you like fighting over like putting the cap back on the toothpaste, which is legitimately a fight we've had, you're like, it's funny, right? You're like, oh my God. Like when I look back at myself yelling at Delilah about an apple is a fruit, it's like, it's funny. We all laughed, right? Because it's so ridiculous. So you have to find humor. If you don't find humor, you will be mad all the time. The other day I was doing some laundry and we have our laundry rooms like separate, you know, in the back in the kitchen. So I don't know what the kids are doing. Who knows? Like for maybe 3 minutes. And I come out and like one of my kids has their diaper pulled off. Delilah is crying because she has a math problem that she doesn't want to do. Nolan is like, can I watch TV? Can I watch TV? Everly's coloring on the walls. Emma's crying. And I will either laugh or I will lose my ever-loving mind. Honestly. And there are situations like that where you just have to find the humor in it. And when you want to scream, you laugh. I don't know. I think it's powerful. I think laughing is a very powerful force. The last thing that I really want you guys to take away about anger is that there's power in the pause. We saw that with God, right? We saw he felt angry. Instead of unleashing that anger, what did he do? He paused. He turned away and he got right with himself. And also, do you know what that pause allows your body to do? The pause allows the thinking brain to catch up with the fight response, right? So when we pause and either just take deep breaths or physically walk away from a situation, your thinking brain is coming back coming back and your fight response is going down a little, and you can be a reasonable person and realize, I don't need to scream that at them. I don't need to throw this. I don't need to do this because I'm in control of my feelings. And I'm going to pause and I'm going to get right and then I'm going to handle it. So there's power in the pause, okay? And I believe, just to wrap up, that there is so much redemption in anger. That when we take our anger and we either release it or we turn it into compassion and action, that we could really and truly change the world. Our own worlds, our own marriages, our own parenting, and the larger world, the problems, the injustices that we see. If we were so angry that we were moved to compassion and action, I really believe that we could be a force, just a force to be reckoned with. So just remember that anger is gonna happen, and it's what we do with that anger that God really cares about.
Thanks for listening to this week's talk. Join us next week for a new conversation or download the Humanity Church app to continue interacting with the community at Humanity. Thanks and have a great week.